Closures, comebacks, and computer chaos. Intrigued? If so, stay tuned and we'll also tell you who wins the Randox Grand National. Hello everybody, welcome to this Easter Monday edition of The Front Page. As you've heard already, tons to get through in this week's show. Joining me, Lee Mottershead, on the 90 degree right angle sofa is Jonathan Harding. Hello Jonathan.
Morning, Lee.
Thank you. And at home in Lambourne, or in you are in Lambourne, aren't you, Lee? Were you not feeling that well, Liam Head?
Yes, here, still kicking, Lee. Looking forward to a good show.
Well, let's crack on with that show. And we're going to begin this week, not by looking back, but looking forward, because Saturday brings us the world's greatest steeplechase, perhaps the world's greatest horse race, the Randox Grand National. As ever, a different sort of Grand National these days to the ones that we used to see. Full of class, full of fancy top weights, full of runners trained by Willie Mullins towards the head of the market, including the winner from 2 years ago, Aya Maximus, who is favourite for the race at this stage. Liam, what's the vibe in Lambourne about this year's Grand National? Who wins, and is there a Lambourne candidate?
No, it doesn't look like we're going to have one this year. Usually we kind of have to rely on Nicky Henderson with one of his runners, but it doesn't look like, I think Highland was one of his possibles, but I don't think he'll get in. So it'll be a Lambourne free zone in the big race on Saturday. But nevertheless, it's always a great race. It's like a lottery trying to pick out the winner of the race, isn't it? I mean, there's always so many stories to sort of come out of the race. Obviously last year with Nick Rocket winning it for father and son, Willie Mullins and Patrick Mullins. It's a very hard race to predict. Even who lines up, will I suppose by the time this show goes out, we'll have a better understanding of what the final field might look like. But it's a race that kind of stops and the nation in sort of in our sense, and great to be involved in it some way, you know, sort of writing about it, speaking to connections, and we just hope for a good race with everyone that gets round, really.
Absolutely. John, when I was even younger than you are now, I used to look forward to Grand National Day more than any other day. Grand National Grandstand was my favourite thing of the whole year, loved it. Even now, slightly older, and it's a slightly different race, I still get more excited for the Grand National than any other horse race. David Carr wrote a really good Another View column, which Racing Post Plus members can see, where he explained about how, yes, the race has changed, but everything in society has changed. I guess ideally, the organisers, Aintree, Jockey Club, Randox, might like to see a bit of a shock this year, a bit of a turn up, someone from outside the norm winning the race. But looking at the betting, that's maybe not that likely.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think there was an acceptance that changes needed to be made. There were some quite uncomfortable moments around the Grand National. I think that's fair. And public perception being what it is, and it's the one Saturday of the year that I both love and look forward to. It's really interwoven with my history in racing and love for the sport, but at the same time I always watch the race with some degree of trepidation, because I know that people in my wider circle are interested, and there's obviously if horses fall, if horses lose their lives, then it's a really challenging day. So I think there was an acceptance that changes need to happen, and the consequence of that is that it is now for a classier horse, and perhaps there are fewer fairy tales. That's a bit of a cliche, but I think there's less room for fairy tales. That doesn't mean they won't happen, and there is a few potential storylines this year, but I think the nature of the race is such that it is lending itself more to those bigger yards and classier horses. If that's the trade-off for a cleaner spectacle and six or seven being in contention going over the last, I personally don't think that's a bad thing. But I know there will be others who think it's perhaps lost a little bit of its romanticism.
Yeah, I mean, Liam, it's a £1 million handicap. It's far and away the most valuable horse race in jump racing in this part of the world. So in that sense, it's entirely logical that you're going to have some very high-class horses in the race this year. So Aya Maximus heads the betting, probably with an expectation that Paul Townend will ride. Last year's winner, Nick Rocket, who was a real fairy tale winner for the Mullins, he's back in there again. We've got some really interesting runners, two runners from the Oliver Greenall, Josh Guerrero team, Iroko and Jaguar. Oscar's brother, he'd be a really popular winner for smaller connections, albeit owned by the sport's biggest owner, JP McManus. Panic Attack's an interesting runner for Dan Skelton. There always are stories going into a Grand National, even if some of them might seem more predictable than others, there's always going to be stories.
Yeah, and that's the sort of beauty of a race of this magnitude, when everything's kind of on the line, the prize money is at its peak, and you know, you usually get a top class race because the horses that are there deserve their chance to be there. I think there's obviously a bit of, as Jonathan mentioned, there's kind of two different racing fans that look at this race. You know, you've got your purists that will watch this and have watched this for the last sort of 30, 40 years. But then you've got people that don't really know a lot about horse racing. The Grand National might be the only race of the year that they watch. And, you know, from their point of view, they might be a bit confused as to why there's so many horses in, you know, the green and gold of JP, and why there's so many horses of Willie Mullins. And it kind of takes the shine away a little bit because, you know, certainly this year, you look at the first eight in the market, I think five of them are trained by Willie Mullins. You know, there's probably the same amount owned by JP McManus. So the chances of a fairy tale this year are kind of slim, but that's not to say it won't happen. Even Nick Rocket last year was a fairy tale, albeit trained by Mullins, because it had that sort of family feel to it that touched everyone, given the fact that it was the father and son that won the race. So I think the race has still got a lot of gloss to it. Obviously, it's not the same race as years gone by, but it's still the one that kind of gets people interested, gets people involved in. And yeah, I hope we can see the best possible running again.
And Liam, just in terms of the wider festival, that's got bigger and bigger and better over the years. Your local star man, Nicky Henderson, could have a big week. John Bonn is entered in the Bowl and the Melling Chase. If he went for the Bowl, he'd be going up against Django Bay, who's the odds-on favourite. Could again be another big week for Seven Barrows.
It could. And listen, it's kind of rolling on after such an impressive Cheltenham Festival. You know, we had the three winners there, albeit not the three winners with Holloway Queen and Jingo Blue that you kind of expected when he also had the likes of Lulamba running as well. But he's got such an impressive team, and the good thing is with Seven Barrows is that they've kind of been in form all season. There's been times in previous years where you've got before Cheltenham or before Aintree and things have kind of gone wrong or whatsoever. I know we've obviously seen changes in such a Constitution Hill going to the flat now, and sadly we lost Sergino there the other week, but in terms of the horses that have been running, they've been running well. And you mentioned John Bonn. It's an interesting one, really, because he's got those two options. But there's also a sense that he could essentially bypass the meeting itself and go straight to Sandown for possibly the celebration chase, given how hard of a race he had at Cheltenham. He never looked like he was really going to win. And he's had quite a hard season, obviously winning those two Grade 1s at Ascot. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But like you said, you've got... yes, we won't see the likes of Old Park Star or Active Innocence there this year at Aintree, but Django Bay was fantastic in the Gold Cup. He's going to run on Thursday. You know, he'd be favourite in that Grade 1. And, you know, there's a few. Jinko Blue could run again. So it's, you know, it's an exciting time to be associated with the yard, really.
Yeah, it is. And Liam, we're going to hear more from you about the yard in a few moments when we talk about the Lambourne Open Day. And stay tuned as well, because at the end of the show, whether you want them or not, we will be giving you our tips for the Randocks Grand National. Before we do that, though, a change of tack now. We're going to look at two stories relating to racecourses and stories that got people very hot under the collar. First of them relates to Chelmsford City Racecourse, Essex's only racecourse. A week ago, we reported in the Racing Post that the tracks meeting the previous week had only just taken place through special dispensation given by the BHA and administrators who'd been brought in to deal with Great Lees Estates Limited, the operating company that ran fixtures at Chelmsford Racecourse. At that point, Chelmsford was talking as if there were no problems about staging its two-day Easter meeting, which was due to take place last Thursday and Friday. Well, that confidence proved to be unjustified. It was revealed, announced by the BHA and Chelmsford on Wednesday lunchtime of last week, that the two-day meeting would not take place because the BHA had decided not to sanction a licence for a company called Golden Mile Racing that had been set up to take over the operating licence from Great Lees Estates Limited. Now, two interesting elements to this story. One was owners, trainers and jockeys were furious that the BHA had only announced the announcement on Wednesday after declarations had already been made for racing at Chelmsford on Thursday and Friday, thus obviously preventing horses who'd been entered in those races from perhaps being entered in other races that week and making life very difficult for jockeys who by that point had already had declared rides for Thursday and Friday when they could have gone elsewhere. The wider issue relates to whether Chelmsford should or should not receive a licence. Racing Post Plus members can read a column I've written about this in the latest edition of the Racing Post, and obviously digitally, etc. The point I'm making that one is actually in support of the BHA. The BHA took the view that it would be wrong to sanction a licence for Golden Mile Racing. They said the reasons for that were confidential. I believe the reasons are linked to the fact that Great Lees Estates Limited had three active directors at the time it went into administration. Those same three active directors are also three of the four active directors of Golden Mile Racing. Key, one of those directors in both is John Holmes, the founder and owner of Chelmsford and before that Great Lees, which is the same racehorse under a different name, which initially launched in 2008. Great Lees went into administration. Great Lees Estates Racing, Great Lees Estates had gone into administration. So in fact, Chelmsford had been linked to two administrations, and I suspect the BHA decided that making it third time lucky would be wrong, particularly as in effect Golden Mile looks like the same company as Great Lees Estates, which went into administration with one extra person. And additionally, Great Lees Estates went into administration owing a racing entity a very large sum of money indeed, which further complicates the matter. John, my view, having tried to pre-see that, is that BHA was absolutely right not to give the John Holmes-led racecourse a licence through Golden Mile, when in effect it was the same company operating the racecourse, just with a different name, largely.
Yeah, and I think the BHA was also right to give it every chance. I understand participants were incredibly frustrated and they would have liked perhaps their card being marked that this situation was ongoing. I think possibly some communication earlier in the week wouldn't have been amiss, but I do agree that the BHA were right to give this new entity every opportunity to put its case forward and convince the BHA that it should be granted a licence. Now, we do essentially have a situation where, you know, the operators of Chelmsford have put forward a timeline and they think that the BHA, they contend that the BHA was very constructive and then essentially was moving the goalposts. The BHA did move to say, you know, we don't agree with that characterisation of events, but also we're not going to speak publicly about these things. It has got a little bit messy because there's a huge amount of frustration on Chelmsford's side. They feel as though they jumped through every hoop. The BHA obviously has its reasons. Clearly, there was enough doubt not to grant that licence. Whether in through the appeal process or whether through other changes, the operators or the would-be operators of Chelmsford are able to convince the BHA that they are able to do that sustainably remains to be seen. But in the interim, I think it was probably the right decision at that time.
Yeah, I agree. And I suspect that if Chelmsford is to have a future as a racecourse, it might well have to be certainly under new control and perhaps also under new ownership. And I think that is going to be difficult to achieve because of matters relating to the racecourse. But I penned a piece, I say, in the Racing Post and on Race Post Plus suggesting that the Jockey Club might be the ideal candidate to ride to Chelmsford Rescue, although I think an awful lot of things have happened before that took place. And the Jockey Club last week had problems of its own in relation to Cheltenham. Because just explain, John, what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a story that caught me by surprise when the email came through, to be honest. I really didn't see it coming. They essentially cancelled their final meetings of the season in order to carry out work on the track. People will remember that image of somebody with their arm in the track on trials day.
Big hole, arm down the hole.
Big old hole on the straight. And they've done an enormous amount of investigative work. It's worth putting on record, they assessed the track, made sure it was perfectly safe for the Cheltenham Festival. It's not a safety issue, but there are restorative works that need to take place on the track. And the Jockey Club logic is it's better to cancel these meetings, start it now, and know it will all be sorted and in place for, you know, more high-profile meeting in October when the season kicks off again, than to postpone it and risk maybe compromising that meeting. That's all well and good and perfectly logical. They moved four races originally. I believe it was four races.
Four races from the two-day April meeting.
From the two-day April meeting, and they moved the Hunter Chase card. Participants quite understandably were saying, well, really you should move all of them, and this has caught us slightly by surprise, and this is not an ideal situation. You can sympathise with them. You can sympathise with the Jockey Club, who obviously didn't want to have to cancel meetings. It's really not ideal. They've since got round the table with the NTF and rescheduled all of those races. So it sounds as though quite a sensible solution was eventually found. Again, it was a communication issue, perhaps, as much as anything else. It's an imperfect situation, but I think common sense did prevail in the end.
Yeah, I think the issue on behalf of trainers is that they had been given no prior foresight that these Cheltenham races that weren't being rescheduled initially were not going to be rescheduled. So races like the Grade 2 Silver Trophy, a number of other races. But yet 2 days later, having, I think, acknowledged that communication wasn't what it should have been, all those races now will be run because Haydock will stage, in effect, those races, won't they? Haydock will mm-hmm. replace Cheltenham. The Silver Trophy will be staged when all other races are going elsewhere. Warwick got the Hunter Chase card, and Cheltenham will have time to deal with drainage issue. I still think all this, to me, makes it look as though that decision back on trials day to run the final race, the Grade 2 Novice Hurdle, after a mere matter of minutes trying to establish if the race course was safe, with hindsight, again, I think with hindsight, Jockey Club would have dealt with this transfer and abandonment in a different way. Mm-hmm. I think with hindsight, they might have dealt with that a different way, but who knows?
No, I think that's right. I think that's right. I think the Cheltenham Festival was sort of separate. I think they'd done enough investigative work to know that there wasn't going to be an issue.
I'm thinking about the trials.
It is just that trials day. Yeah, I think if they had their time again, but what do you do? It is a complicated situation in the moment. I think they were slightly on a hiding to nothing with this. They either, certainly with this most recent move, they either cancel those April meetings and upset members and upset participants, but know that October's fine, or they leave it. October's suddenly compromised and they're getting stick from trainers and owners and members there. It's just, you know, I think this, the additional thing is whether the recompense to members, 7%, I think it was, and access
not,
to those
they've not
meetings,
all been happy, have they, about that, members?
Don't seem to have been. I mean, I'm just speaking off the cuff. I'm not a member. It didn't seem like it was a million miles, or I don't know what a sensible recompense would have been. It didn't seem like it was particularly measly, but at the same time, I suppose if the members, if the weight of the opinion from members is that they've been slightly shortchanged, then that might be the case. That does strike, I don't know about you, that strikes me as the feeling.
Yeah, and I think that members' dissatisfaction is also linked to the fact there was dissatisfaction around changes to the whole annual membership system at Cheltenham, which benefits some people, but don't benefit other cohorts within the annual membership.
Yeah, and I can see that. This might just be the, you know, a little bit of petrol on that fire that was
already
there. Straw that
broke the camel's back, maybe.
Any cliche we like.
Absolutely. Liam, you've been denied a trip to Cheltenham next week, I'm afraid, but you did get to the Lambourne Open Day. Tell us what it was like, tell us what you saw, and what was the mood there?
Yeah, it was a fantastic day, Lee, as it always is. I think this is my third year of covering it now. I've been, I think, one time before that as well. But it's just a day that sort of gets, you know, it puts Lambourne on the map even more than it already is. The day started, as it has done for the last couple of years, at Seven Barrows. The car park next to his yard opened at 8 o'clock, a full hour before all the 20 yards opened up in the village at 9. And by sort of 8:30, the queues to get into the historic yard were forming round the corner. Yeah, it's just remarkable how many people actually make it their sort of main goal to get to that yard, because, you know, there's a lot of people that wouldn't have been there before. You know, it's a great opportunity to get up close and personal to these horses, like Old Park Star, Constitution Hill. Altior was there being paraded as well. So, you know, class runs through that yard. And, you know, Nicky Henderson always puts on a good show for everyone that's there as well. So, you know, there were queues in and out of Seven Barrows all morning until the yards closed at 1 o'clock before the entertainment started in the afternoon in the village. But I mean, there was just such demand. I mean, as there was 12 months ago, there were people queuing up to see Constitution Hill in his box. And, you know, such was the interest of that Nicky decided to get him out every 30 minutes with his groom, Jaden Lee. The horse was having a nice pick of grass and people were sort of surrounding him in a big circle, taking pictures, and Nicky was kind of updating how the horse was and things like that. So it's really great insight for, you know, for everyone involved, particularly those that have never stepped foot in a racing yard before as well.
Yeah, and that's a great summary. And again, Liam, from what you said there about Constitution Hill, it does still underline the fascination that people have with the horse, and which we see as well in the number of people who engage with anything that we write about Constitution Hill.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I spoke to Nicky on Friday at his yard and kind of asked him, you know, did he think the horse was even more popular than he was? And he completely agreed. He said that he believes that his star has risen since he's come over to the flat now, and he kind of continue on the next stage of his career. I just think because I think with top class horses, you know, that they obviously do have their setbacks, and Constitution Hill has undoubtedly had more than a few, but he's come back now onto the flat and he's kind of sort of reinvented himself, kind of thing, because he's won both his starts now, and he looks like he's going to go to Newbury on Saturday week for the John Porter. But it you know, it's like I said, it's, I don't think people get sick of talking about the horse because of the attention he brings, and it kind of just showed firsthand there on Friday how many people wanted to see him. You know, even little kids were sort of in awe at being able to be sort of a stone throw away from a horse who has kind of won it all at Cheltenham and is now sort of taking it onto the flat. So it was a great day, the Lambourne Open Day. You know, even I was able to get to a few other yards. I went to Ed Walker's as well, had a good chat with him about his team for the year ahead. He's got a potential classic hope as well for the season. So, you know, there was others like Nick Schofield was having a great season. He was hosting his first Lambourne Open Day as a trainer, and he had great numbers there. But even all, I mean, there was 20 yards across the village, and I think there was about 7,500 there, and the weather kind of held off in large. So all in all, you know, a lot of money raised for charity as well, which is the main thing, and it just proves how popular this day really is in the calendar.
Fantastic. Thanks, Liam. And John, in terms of popularity, and the wider popularity of racing and jump racing, and the sense that there has been a bit of a resurgence in interest. I was at Newton Abbott on Saturday, your former local track, your home local track. I've not worked there for 16 years. I don't get back there very often. But on Saturday, I was there to do a colour piece for the Post, and they had their biggest attendance. When the line they used was for a century. I thought, actually thought for over a quarter of a century has a bit more impact, because people say this century, think, what year are we in? But anyway, that's by the by. Over 8,000 people at Newton Abbot on Saturday. Really amazing buzz. I mean, the betting ring was heaving. There was loads of people, loads of young people too. Great feel about the place. So I thought that was tremendous to see. Also tremendous to see was Clifford Lee returning from what might have been a life-ending accident on his motorbike. With he returned at Newcastle on Friday and had a winner at Musselburgh on Saturday in the Goliath Cup.
Yeah, great result. I mean, that's one of those, isn't it, where you just almost say it had to happen. A remarkable recovery. Listening and reading his quotes is exceptional, just his sort of determination to get back as quickly as he has. And then it was almost written that he would ride a winner. It's a great story. It's one of those universal ones, isn't it, that for us as reporters makes our job so easy, because it's just fantastic to write about, really emotive. And yeah, good on him, because when he had that injury, he was absolutely flying.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's always a doubt, I suppose, that he'd be able to pick up that winning thread again after going through something like that and building himself back up. But it was a great winning ride, and hopefully that will just kickstart him onto what will probably be a big season again with Carl Burke. I think they were such an emerging force is probably wrong, because they've always been there or thereabouts.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
in those big races, they were major players. It felt like every week, and he was a big part of that, and I'm sure he will be in the coming months.
I'm sure he will be too. And not the strongest weekend of quality racing in this part of the world, although we've got the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National coming up later in the day. But Tommy Seuss, you might even know who won, so good luck with that one. Car Ying Rising dotted up in Hong Kong not long after we're recording this, broke the track record again. And in Australia, Jolly Star won the TJ Smith, confirming her participation at Royal Ascot. And an amazing performance by us called She's a Alibi, joint trained by Peter Moody of Black Caviar fame, who was as impressive a winner as you will ever see in the Group 1 Doncaster Mile. And she looks an absolute superstar. So big stuff on the global stage.
Yeah, big stuff on the global stage. It's always a question of what can we do to get them to come over here? I know Ascot and Nick Smith and the like are working very hard to get these international horses over. It sounds as though the Australian ones might. Kai Ying Rising's a different kettle of fish, unfortunately. He probably won't until certainly next year.
Wasn't there an unfortunate April Fool's thing? Was it World Horse Racing?
I think there was an unfortunate April
Fool's
thing.
Which they apologised.
Yeah. They take his campaign quite seriously. Yeah. They don't want to sort of sow any doubt about where he might run.
Yeah, especially he might go to Royal Ascot, which clearly isn't going to happen.
Well, I was in Hong Kong... whenever I was in Hong Kong at the end of last year.
You were there in December?
Yeah, that tallies. Yeah, such a blur. Naturally raised that question, and I think it was a case of where you stick to the programme he's got for another season, and then who knows beyond that. It would be fantastic to see him come over to Royal Ascot, but you know, he can win so much money in the Everest and wherever he runs domestically. I think it probably doesn't make financial sense, but us romantics would love to see him.
And we're all romantics on this programme. Liam, just rattle through a few other stories now. One man who will be at Royal Ascot is Aidan O'Brien, but he had an unusual headline-making story last week. The Ballydore computer went bananas.
Yeah, it did. It's not something you see every day. He had Albert Einstein and Stard. The plan was to sort of keep them in the 2,000 guineas. And it sounded like there was some sort of glitch at Ballydoyle where both horses were not sort of, I think they were scratched, weren't they, or sort of something like that.
It was scratched.
It was absolutely crazy, really. I mean, everyone thought that kind of there was some sort of setback, and especially in the wake of Albert Einstein's disappointing run Stard's disappointing run, sorry, it was, I think. Was
no,
it,
Albert Einstein. Albert, are you right the first time, with the curry and the gladness?
Yeah, that's the one. There's that many Ballydoyle horses these days, hard to keep track of them. But, yeah, especially after his performance in the chorus. So, It was a question mark of had something happened at home or was the setback, but bizarrely a computer glitch was the reasoning for those not to being in the race. So it sounds like they're very much going to be back into the race, but unfortunately for the budget at Ballydoyle, they're going to have to fork up £30,000 each to supplement them back into the race. So a bit of a strange predicament we find ourselves in, but we might get the solution if they are supplemented.
Yes, and we've all had a computer go bananas, haven't we, Jonathan?
We have. I haven't made a computer error that's cost me £60,000 no. yet, thank
Give
God.
Give it time.
Give it time. But look, if one of them goes and wins, they probably all laugh about it, won't they? Yeah. And that's entirely possible they will.
Yeah, I still quite fancy Albert Einstein. You know, that's...
We're too quick to write these horses off. It frustrates me. Yeah, people need to be more forgiving, I think.
Yeah. Well, we don't want you frustrated.
That's an Easter message. Easter message of forgiveness.
Absolutely. Yeah, beautiful words there. Other news, rattle through other bits. We had a story about Alex Wood, investigative reporter, highlighting yet more black market betting madness. Will the Government Gambling Commission take notice? William Hill closing 200 shops.
Yeah.
Betting shops.
Yeah. Unsurprising. That doesn't mean it's not newsworthy and it's not really sad and not frustrating, but we saw this coming. There was always going to be a knock-on effect to the changes in taxation. Evoke has had its own challenges as well. So look, this was always likely. It doesn't make it any less disappointing or damaging to racing. Obviously, betting shops are a key part of the kind of fabric of the sport, financially and just culturally. It's a big part of racing and going and having that community in a betting shop. So to see so many close and contribute to what is very obviously a downward trend is, yeah, disappointing but not surprising.
Yeah. And finally, if you are a Racing Post Plus member, I would advise you to have a look at Peter Scargill's piece going inside the story of Project Pace, which Jonathan has been British Racing's, some elements of British Racing attempt to try and find a way of bringing a huge sum of money into the sport. It basically would involve packaging a number of races between the Guineas and the Ebor Festival, having a Group 1 race, at least one Group 1 race every Saturday, but it requires racecourses to really buy into the concept and to an extent give up a certain amount of control over some of their crown jewels. And Pete's piece basically showed that that doesn't appear to be likely to happen yet.
No, it's one of those things where I love the concept. You know, we're talking about these international horses, the global calendar on the flat, you know, helped by the World Pool, actually, there's quite a stitched together program and it all kind of works quite logically as a product, which is a word I'm loath to use. Mm. But I do like the idea of there being a greater coherence to the British season. It makes sense to have a Group 1 every weekend, and if you can package it as something and get a sponsor, get an investor, clearly British Racing needs big investment. You know, I think, having spoken to Barry Hearn a while back about the way the sport's funded, it's not, you can tweak here and there, but what it ultimately needs is a fairly big whack of money coming in to kind of keep it moving in the right direction, or indeed stop the decline, not to be too pessimistic. But as ever, great idea, challenging to get it off of the ground because different stakeholders have different financial realities, they answer to different people, and any relinquishing of control, you know, they don't do that lightly, racecourses, with good reason to an extent, but it's going to take a little bit of conceding or kind of compromise to get this off the ground. A lot of money and time has been put into it, is the frustration.
Yeah. You don't like to use the word product. How do you feel about journeys?
That's fine.
You like journeys?
I'm right with that, yeah.
Okay, cool. Right, Grand National tips now. Liam Head, who wins at 4 p.m. on Saturday? Well, probably about 4:10 on Saturday. The Randox Grand National.
$1 million question, Lee. But if I had to pick one now, I think Iroko's got a great chance, and I think he's probably the best chance for Britain. Certainly, I think he ran in the was he 10th in the Ultima last time out? Yeah, he was. But I think they might have needed that run really just to sort of get the juices flowing a little bit. I mean, don't forget he finished fourth in the race last year. So I always like to sort of side with a horse who's got that experience of running over this marathon trip. And I think that run, I think they might be happy with that run than they're kind of letting on. I think they just kind of needed that to get the fitness on side. And I think he'll run another big race. At a bigger price, I think Spillane Tower can run a great race if he goes. Obviously, unfortunate for Jimmy Mangan not to be able to run in the Gold Cup because of the ground as a late non-runner. But I just thought he was a brilliant winner of the Cotswold Chase in January. Proves he stays a good stamina trip. And I think he might benefit for that extra break since his last run.
Okay, thanks, Liam. Iroka was my first choice last year, which was costly. I have got him in my portfolio that's far too large already for this year's race. But my main two would be Captain Cody, hoping that Harry Cobden rides him. We might learn more today about for whom Harry Cobden will be riding in the Grand National. He could have a big chance, and I like Panic Attack as well after her two big handicap wins this season. Jonathan Harding.
I don't know if we're allowed to do two.
Well, Liam had two, so if he can have two, I can have two.
That's,
I'm supposed to be the host.
Look, I'll give you one, Oscar's brother. I think he's really well handicapped.
Okay.
Nothing to do with the fact Ruby Walsh quite fancies him,
nothing
I promise
to do
you.
With the fact.
I would never be swayed.
He was quite keen, you tell me.
He was very keen.
Very keen. What was the word? What was the phrase again?
Well, I couldn't possibly.
But, okay. But he was keen.
Very keen. Bullish, very keen. One might
bullish.
Say.
Bullish.
It's obvious that, not to disparage Ruby, but it is an obvious chance, very well handicapped.
Yeah.
In the right colours now, you know, you can see it happening. Panic Attack as well would be my other one.
Okay.
I'm worried about the historical trend of mares in the Grand National.
Are you? Mm.
But look, you look at the races that she's won.
Yeah.
Really likeable, great prep at the Cheltenham Festival, a bit like Oscar's brother, like perfectly good prep and very low in the weights, isn't she? So I think she'll be there or thereabouts.
Perfect. Well, the historical trend that relates to this show, as I slap my thigh for some reason, is that we appear every week. So we will be back next week. By when, we will know who has won the Grand National. Until then, thank you to Liam in Lambourne. Thank you to Jonathan in London. And thanks to you for watching wherever you are in the world. Have a great week. Have a great Grand National. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.